Welcome to another edition of Everyone Hates Cleveland, the podcast. This is our second podcast since we've been back on our own feed, which means we're official now. This time, Hattery's the only one with me today. And while Gage was with us for 4 seconds, apparently when you have three kids under the age of 10, one of them being two weeks old, apparently things go quite a little bit crazy.
Yeah, it's hard to podcast with kids, apparently.
First of all, we want to give thanks to everybody who listens to the podcast. We got a surprising large amount of hits on the podcast this week, so we really do appreciate that. Our first podcast back on a new feed. We get over 300 hits. That's a pretty good start. So please, 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 if you're listening to this and you haven't done so yet, go to Go to Apple Podcasts, click subscribe, give us a 5-star review. I promise we won't do any more of that stuff in this podcast unless it's at the tail end and you can just stop it at the end.
A 4-star is fine too. Even a 3. I'd take a 3, but I really, no ones and twos, guys.
This is our passive aggressive side. We want 5-star reviews. Don't listen to Hattery. our takes are generally bad, but you know, they appreciate our earnestness in them. All right. Our 2019 positional previews are starting right now. Last year, they got curtailed by life. This time, they are not going to get curtailed. There are three of us doing them this year, and we'll be doing them in all kinds of crazy conglomerations. Or Gage will be tackled by three youngins, and Mike and I will just end up doing them all. I don't know what will happen, but we definitely need Gage takes in here because he generally pisses me off more than Mike, which is saying something.
It's actually impressive because a lot of my takes are just structured around.
We're kind of in that stage, Mike. We're like, I'm not going to call us an old married couple because that's weird, but I'm starting to strangely agree with a lot of things that you say. I don't know what that means.
I know. It's because I've gotten a little grumpier and more old school.
Oh, what? Oh, God. So what you're saying is that I'm agreeing with you because you're getting more like me?
Yeah, it's true. It's a mixture of the two.
The sad thing is you're literally half my age. I don't know what that means. All right.
I'm also like the oldest 26-year-old people I've ever met.
I being that I'm wondering when you're going to retire, I think that's probably true.
I'm wondering too. My wife is 4 years older and people always think she's like 3 years younger than me. Whenever they meet us, they're like, oh.
I don't think I knew that. I think I'm pretty sure I thought that you were older than your wife though.
Yeah. It's very common. She's about to be 30 and I'm just hanging out here.
Oh God.
Wrapped in a blanket with a dog.
Please, if you're listening to this, go to our YouTube channel. Just type Everyone Hates Cleveland and go to our YouTube channel and just take a look at this. This is the sad thing, Mike, is it's just kind of the normal thing. So
I know. Pupper buried her head. She's very embarrassed. Hi, Liza. Say hi to the camera.
The sad part is this is going to get the biggest pop of the entire podcast.
All right.
We might talk
about catcher today.
We are going to talk. Well, I don't know. So we're starting with catcher, and for the past three seasons, I think the big, you know, I think the first thing we started off with it is who's going to be over 50% and who's going to be under 50% between Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez. We don't have that conversation anymore because the Indians traded Yan Gomes in what we believed was the beginning of the Indians, I don't know, maybe kind of getting under the cap so that they could go out and get some under the cap. I keep saying this as though there's such a thing.
I know, it offends me.
I apologize about that. if the Indians are trying to unload money so that they could reship the money somewhere else, that, of course, was half true. They were trying to unload money. And the thoughts of Grandel that you and I both had way back in December sort of went away. And
how cheap was that too? How stupid was that?
We probably can talk about that a little bit later in this podcast because he's going to be way more interesting than what we're going to talk about. But we do probably have to talk about Indians catchers. So let's just start with the obvious. You know, Perez has, you know, and we've – certain stages of his career pined for him to be the guy that they predominantly use. I guess this is what we have this year, Mike. So, you know, with if you look at the depth chart right now, you know, I think it was a little more tolerable for us when we thought it might be a Eric Haas kind of meshing of the two. It doesn't look to be that way as we speak, but, you know, let's just look at Yan Gomes. I mean, that's really what it is. Let's look at Roberto Perez as the full-time starter. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know what he's very good at, which is important at the position. He's very good at catching the ball. Framing it, positioning it adequately. Yeah, I mean, he's a very good framer, yada, yada, yada. That adds value. I mean, I think the super fun part, if I was going to do the optimistic portion of this podcast summary, would be that I think watching on its own will be stupid fun. Like watching someone with, like him catching Kluber and Bieber, two guys with like plus command, like with Perez behind the dish, like adds so much value. And I think it's going to be a ton of fun to watch, like what they try and, you know, how much they try and work the edges of the plate and like steal strikes. So that's fun. But yeah, the offense isn't good. And actually, I feel bad because Gage wrote a really good piece about Roberto Perez's offense. And a big part of it was his, you know, sort of like first big season success, which a lot of us were like, oh, like this is a pretty positive indicator. If he can be 90% of this offensively, this is like a good starting catcher. Well, teams figured out that they could just like really throw breaking balls, especially the curveball, to him. And he sucks against the curveball. He walks less, doesn't have great discipline. And so I think, you know, Gage raised a really strong question as to whether like maybe like 70 WRC plus Roberto Perez is just like, that's reality. And that's kind of scary.
And I think the funny thing about Perez, even, you know, back when there was kind of plus upside to him, was that you could sort of bury him in a lineup that had, you know, a lot of visible offensive talent. The lineup may turn out to be better than advertised this year. There's a lot of question marks, but isn't that really the problem going forward with Perez? I mean, defensively, obviously, you know, we can talk about semantics here, and I, you know, while you mentioned, you know, the fun of the framing piece, you know, we do have a rotation set up for, you know, not necessarily needing a great framer, but, you know, that we can debate that all we want to. You can't really hide him in this lineup, can you? I mean, where do you hit? Because we're going to probably have two or three guys with question marks, at least kicking off the spring, at least two or three, if not more. I mean, you know, I guess this is a bigger question of lineup, and we'll get to that once we get through positional previews. But, you know, 70, I guess my point here is he going to, you know, the burden on a lineup that doesn't have a bottom end of it that's as strong as it's been in the past, like that could be a problem, right?
Yeah, you make a really good point, which is I think like going the Perez route made a lot more sense the last couple of years where you had a much better lineup. I mean, I think you make a really good point. It's a lot easier to hide a non-hitting catcher in the eight hole when like 1 through 7 are all very productive. When they're not, it's a lot more difficult to hide. And I think that's just going to be the case this year. I think it's going to look kind of ugly. I mean, I think the positive with Perez and Plawecki is, which is something Gage also wrote about. I'm stealing all his content. But it's something Gage and I discussed all offseason. I've talked with Jim and Adam Burke and other folks is the Indians, you know, have really acquired a bunch of guys this offseason in Bowers, Plawecki, Matt Joyce to a lesser extent that all walk a ton. And, you know, Perez is the same sort of way. So they're going to clog the base paths a little bit, but they're going to get on base a lot and not a lot. At least they have a skill to get them there. Like, you know, like Perez is never going to hit for a good average, but I think Plawecki and him will walk enough that maybe it isn't hellish. I think the greater point to suss out that you made was whether there's significant diminishing returns to having a good framer when you have 5 plus starting pitchers And I have no good answer to that question.
Well, we've debated that. We've debated that for years and years and years. You know, are the framing numbers for, you know, this is a new statistic, and trying to figure out like how, you know, being the catcher of these elite guys that Perez has been catching over the years, like how much does that have input into how good a framer he is? It also may explain why Yan Gomes keeps returning to being a good framer, a decent framer at the very least, after having seasons where he literally drops off the chart. I mean, I it's an interesting debate, I think, to watch this year, especially as we see maybe perhaps Eric Haas come up, and who's, you know, obviously not as good defensively, but has shown decent, you know, skills behind the plate. A guy like Plawecki, who's pretty good defensively as well. But I guess looking at the depth here, at the major league depth, you know, we're probably looking at, you know, Plawecki as the backup. You know, tell me before we get to him, you know, Mike, you've been, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, being that you and I have followed the minor leagues for, you know, 6-7 years now in a detailed way. You know, we have these guys that we kind of fall in love with. They're not necessarily, you know, Perez was that guy for me. You know, they're not necessarily major league starters, unless, of course, you're the only one left. But, you know, tell me about Eric Haas. Like, why in the heck did the Indians, I mean, it appears like they gave up on him a little bit before we got to see him really get a chance to be kind of that substantial part-time role with a starting Roberto Perez.
Yeah, I'm guessing it just has to do with, like, they're a little worried about his contact profile at the big leagues, and the defense isn't defense is, like, solid, but his power has to sort of carry him enough to make his profile work as a starter. I still am somewhat optimistic that's possible, and I mean, I just, to me, he was always most fascinating, and I bought in because he made really bright adjustments and worked really hard. You know, that's what makes you buy in. He made a great launch angle adjustment, and all of a sudden he was showing like 60 grade raw power, 65 grade game power, stuff like that. I mean, crazy production. So, I mean, and still, even in like a frustrating year, he hits 20 home runs. He has a WRC plus above 100 in Columbus. He looks pretty, you know, rock solid behind the plate. They really like his base mechanics, receiving, throwing the ball. So, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't. Plawecki isn't particularly interesting to me. And I do think the positive point potentially is that I think from a depth perspective, this is better than Tim Fedorowicz or whoever the hell is the fourth catcher right now. And I mean, you still have options on Haas. So I do think it's positive in that. I think Haas probably sees 30 games this year. Catchers don't stay healthy. Plawecki and Perez have both had problems staying healthy. So, I mean, I think we're going to see Haas. I was just a little more hopeful, perhaps, that it was Haas breaking with camp, which he won't, but we'll see enough of him.
I mean, do you see, Mike, and I mean, kind of the overall take on the lineup, and again, I guess the neat thing about the positional previews this year is you do have to maybe look at an organizational shift, perhaps them trying to figure out this lineup in a different, unique way without spending the money that they've spent in the past. You know, they bring back Carlos Santana, and they clearly, as we've mentioned at EHC and all the pieces that you guys are writing that talk about offense, it seems like they're looking for this like high contact, high walk profile up and down the lineup. I mean, is this simply, you know, this is what we have to do this year? We can't have a guy in the lineup who's potentially going to be that complete black hole where he's all power and nothing. I mean, is this just an organizational shift for a year while the Indians sort of balance their economics a bit before they start giving a guy like Haas a chance again next year, if they can perhaps reshift the lineup again with perhaps freeing up some money with some guys leaving?
I don't know. I think we're still going to see Brad Zimmer get a lot of at bats. So I haven't seen him hit anything that isn't nailed down in about a year and a half. So.
That one's for you, Gage.
That's my shtick, apparently. It is fascinating to me. I will say I've become inherently skeptical of players and valuing players who anchor like 80% of their value on defense, especially like outfielders and center fielders. And I think that one of the lessons we maybe haven't learned of where teams are advancing is that they don't value it. I think one of the most eye-opening things to me from this offseason, stepping back for a moment, was like Billy Hamilton. And like the Reds are just like, we're going to non-tender a guy who steals a ton of bags and is a better defender than Zimmer. And then I'm supposed to buy into Zimmer being like a two-war player and valuable when the Reds non-tendered Hamilton at like $6 million. Yeah, I don't buy it. You know, I think it's something where I think we're probably overvaluing that skill in how we compute war. And I'm sorry, that's sidetracked from catcher, but that's a rant I really needed to do.
Yeah, I just think that the catching position right now, you know, as we talk a little bit about Plawecki here, and I mean, rare is the day where I look at a guy and I literally have to ask my friends like what the value is. And I mean, if his value, Mike, I mean, and this is no offense to Plawecki because his splits over his career as a big leaguer have been really mixed bag. I mean, if you're looking for a platoon guy with Roberto Perez, you know, on the offensive side of things, like this makes zero sense aside from the fact that, you know, he does walk a bit. You know, I mean, he doesn't bring really much value as far as platoon goes because he's had seasons in which he's been better from the right side of the plate than the left side. He has had – it's just one of those things where you're almost throwing darts. I mean, you know, what's the upside to Plawecki aside from the fact that, you know, he, I mean, obviously there's some defense there. But, I mean, what – you know, I mean, what? Why? Like, couldn't they – I mean, is it just one of those things where they're sort of – sifting guys up with a sifter and throwing this guy out there? Like what stands out to you? Does anything stand out to you about Plawecki? And then please let's talk about the minor leaguers because this is really sad. I'm getting sad now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a near league average bat for the last 400 plate appearances, so that's, I guess, positive. I mean, I think the concerning part is he's like not a super good defender.
I know. He's like
a pretty mediocre defender. I think offensively he's a pretty substantial step above Perez potentially. I know we're in the middle of the Perez's goat tour. I don't know. I think Plawecki could like actually be competent offensively. And I just am not super optimistic that's in there for Roberto Perez anymore. I think Plawecki was a what if the bottom really did fall out of Roberto Perez offensively play. And I mean, I get the arguments that Perez isn't broken offensively, like weird at bats. He's only had like 200 each the last couple of years. He's had injuries, but he's had injuries and he's only had 200 at bats. Like, why am I supposed to be confident that giving him 400 at bats is going to be a lot better? I don't know.
Well, I mean, is there a chance? I mean, I guess we've had this conversation the past 3-4 years. I mean, is there a chance that Plawecki was brought in here to eventually get, you know, more games than Perez?
I don't know, man. Maybe.
All right. The hell with this. Let's talk depth. I don't know, you know, as we start getting into minor league depth with the Cleveland Indians, you know, we can talk about the literally 18 different guys that they're talking about at the AAA level. I mean, you've got old guys like Navarro. You've got young guys like Salters and Loopstock at the AAA level. I mean, you can go all the way down to a guy like Bo Naylor before you can get to a guy that's even interesting. He's 19 years old, so he's a long way off. I mean, what do you think overall? It does seem if you go to our lower edge of the minors, it does seem like the Indians are investing at the catcher position at that level. But is there anything interesting in a guy like Salters or Loopstock potentially down the road? And you know, I mean, you bring in a guy like Navarro, could this guy, are they going to keep this guy because he's a switch hitter and I don't know, you know, he's old and there were days when he was kind of interesting. Is this a guy that you keep? I mean, who's going to get stoved in this catcher? Or is it just one of those wash things where we just have to grin and bear it for the next 3 or 4 years and hope some of these young guys come up and eventually, you know, have a major role with the team, which is like throwing darts at Rice.
Wow. That's a small target. Yeah, no, it's bleak. it's a mile of manure and then Bo Naylor, basically. I mean, Mike Rivera, I think some people think he's a big league ready catcher defensively right now. The question is just like, can we get any offense out of him? Definitely, I'm blanking on the name, but he caught a little bit this year in Lake County. I spoke to Lake County's manager about a bunch of different stuff this year. I cannot believe he was a recent. He's a phenomenal interview. I think he's going to be great as a manager in the system. It wouldn't be surprised if he's managing in the big leagues. Luke Carlin, he's a delight.
Yeah.
And he spoke, you know, he's a big league catcher. He's very positive on Rivera. But there's no offense. So, I mean,
well,
the positive outcome, I think, for Rivera is Roberto Perez. And, like, Roberto Perez is really nice. He's, like, a really good backup and maybe a starter. But I think it's probably just he's a really good backup. So it's Bo Naylor. Salters is of little interest to me. Loopstock is, like, fun because he's a really good framer, but he's a horrible blocker.
Well, then he is definitely perfect to see. Now, there's a guy we can get when we talk about framing and whatnot. There's a guy that maybe you can get behind because, I don't know, blocking on this team doesn't seem to be a super big deal, but I don't know.
I don't know.
All right, let's just end it there. I spend a lot of time with this. I think the catcher position, anything you get from it this year that's not below average is going to be icing on the cake. So we'll have maybe a run here and there where we can be a little bit happy. But, you know, not a whole lot to expect. Thank goodness Roberto Perez is a good defender. We'll see what the season brings. Maybe we'll be trading for one at the deadline because we have so many prospects to deal with to get a catcher.
It's also worth noting it's a historically bleak, like, league-wide catcher production stinks.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it does. I mean, I think probably later in the year we'll probably have some time to talk about other catchers, but such is life. We shall end it there. All right, Mike, one is done. I'm not promising when the second one will be done, although maybe soon. We shall see. Peace. Go Tribe. Get some catchers. God. We could talk. No. We're just going to end it there.
Have a good night, everybody.